Hello, you are listening to Skip Intro with me, Lee Chui Lin, as well as Bahi Yusof and Ian McNally. So we know it is Avengers Day. Avengers Endgame, of course, is premiering today. We are incredibly excited for it, but we are giving everyone a chance to catch it on opening day. So tune in tomorrow for our spoiler-free geek out. In the meantime, today we want to ask you a very important question. Are you going to take the red pill or the blue pill?
You've been living in a dream world, Neo.
I know Kung Fu.
Show me.
Mr. Anderson.
He's beginning to believe. He is the one.
So it's the 20th anniversary of The Matrix, which makes everybody here, I think, feel just like, I mean, where has the time gone? But anyway, we thought it would be a good time to revisit it because it was kind of a big deal.
Yeah,
kind of. Yeah, I rewatched it over the weekend, and despite watching it maybe 30 to 100 times around the time it came out, and when it came out on DVD, and when it came out on Blu-ray, I don't think I've seen it for the last 10 years. And watching it again over the weekend, I was surprised just how well parts of it hold up and other parts don't, and those weren't the parts I thought they would be. A lot of the effects, even though I had a copy of the remastered version, I think from 2003, and some of that compositing looks a bit rough.
Yeah, I mean, for me, rewatching it over the weekend, what it really reminds me of was how my mind was blown watching it for the first time. You know, I'm not rewatching it now, I'm not like thinking, oh, that was so cool. I'm watching it going, oh, I remember when I was 16, 17, and I saw that, and that was really cool then, you know? And yeah, watching, you know what though? Okay, I'm just going to throw it out there. Watching these old movies, these old classics.
That makes me feel so bad when you
say 20 years, dude. Old.
I know.
Accept it. But like The Matrix, like the first Jurassic Park, and how we were so awed by all that. I'm now thinking about my nephews and nieces and going, they'll never have that. They'll never feel the same.
When I went to see The Matrix, I didn't know what it was. All they knew was there was bus shelter ads, posters that had the green text on it and just said, what is thematrix.com? I think no one had any, and the websites were just, you know, becoming a mainstream thing. So you went in, and I can't even remember seeing trailers for the movie. I went to going to see it and just hearing good things, because I think we'd, at that point, there was still the gap. I'm sure you had it as well here, where the US would get a movie and then 3 to 6 months later would get to Ireland or Malaysia. And going in and seeing it in Savoy One and walking out at the end of it and just being like buoyed up, that feeling. And I got that again at certain moments watching it over the weekend, where I just felt that like tension in my chest of just like, yes!
Yeah. And I think that really reminded me of a more innocent time of just society, right? You don't... Watching Neo touch that glass and that liquid sort of engulf him, I remember watching it for the first time and going,
what the hell?
That was creepy. That was scary. Because at that point, it was still quite a creepy, it still had that tense, you know, almost horror vibe to it.
Because you don't know what it is.
You don't know
exactly anything about what it is. And you don't even know if, like, is Morpheus trustable? Is he somebody that you would follow?
Are these baddies?
Or Trinity, or
I mean, they dress like baddies.
They're killing cops at left, right, and center from the opening of the movie.
Yeah. And I forgot how much death there is.
there's a lot of it.
There's none of that, like, you know, oh, I just punch you until you pass out. No, this is like a shotgun to the chest kind of death.
There are sequences in it where I don't have to rewatch it and I could probably tell you frame by frame what happens. And I think it's those things that really embed themselves, right? Like there's the glass, there's a sequence in the lobby. The lobby is great.
Lobby.
And then everybody knows the flailing hands thing. Yeah. I just described it very gracelessly, but everyone knows what
you
I
know
mean.
Where
I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it again. But the moment where Neo grabs Morpheus, drops him off from the helicopter, he's still got the harness on for the helicopter, and he just loops it in slow motion over his arm. And you think, is he going to catch the helicopter? What? And then, like, Trinity sees it, shoots the bolt out. And that was just that moment. Just, again, it's been a while. I was right there with it again. I think the way it mixed together that action, the kind of cerebral science fiction that it tries to do, like, it is, I was trying to think about movies that it was influenced a lot of, and there wasn't, because, I mean, some people tried to, you know, everyone put Bullet Time in everything, Charlie's Angels and everything like that, but it was that weird mix of, like, action, martial arts action, science fiction, cyberpunk, and like, it took me, I think, two or three watches to figure out what the hell was going on with the hovercraft.
Yeah.
Because it's just this, you go, we're in a hovercraft. It's like, what? And then there's this like insect thing with blue lights on the outside. And you're like, what the hell is this?
But it's hard sci-fi, right?
Yeah.
It's not just,
oh, they don't look at
the things, we do the things, right? You know, we're doing this thing to do that thing so that we could all do this thing. No, they actually sort of like, yeah, you have to hack in. This is, you know, you've got all these things. You've got to, you know, you're.
Why do my eyes hurt? Because you've never used them before.
Yeah, you know, muscle atrophy. And so they really went down the rabbit hole.
They did, and they did it in a way that was cold but not cold. Yeah. I don't know how else to describe it because
it's scientific.
Because at the very start, you don't really have any investment in anybody. Yep. You know, you don't really know why anybody's doing anything. So there's no real reason to kind of put your emotional stake in any one person. So they're not relying on the feelings for this. You know, instead, it's the brain, and it's almost like it's a puzzle that you cannot solve when you're watching the movie for the first time.
Like
you're
being trapped in the Matrix, like a splinter in your mind, driving you mad.
Like where I mean, and then you know, and it just keeps going, and like there were. I wonder also. I mean, to go back to your point, Bahi, about how can people still have this moment? I can't remember the last kind of big, you know, movie. Maybe Inception. Is Inception maybe the last one where you had like a cultural moment where everybody was like, "But what does it mean?"
Yeah.
But. And, you know, where you also have the visual, like the city folding in on itself, stuff like that. But Inception was how long ago now? And we don't really have these things anymore.
Yeah.
It's a movie firing on all 16 cylinders plus the turbocharger. Like everything, watching it again, the opening shot and the ending shot are similar. You know, there's the simulations in Simulacra book references. There's so many little things that just keep referencing each other over and over again. It's very well crafted. And it's insane because at that point, the Wachowskis had only done Bound. Yeah. Will Smith recently talked on his YouTube channel about why he turned it down. And he just said that they were pitching him like, yo, they were just like bro-capped backwards. Dude, when you jump, it's like you stop jumping. And then like the camera's around you and we can never see you jumping. And he's just like, yeah, I'm going to do Wild Wild West. This doesn't sound like it's going to work at all.
Good choice.
Yeah.
He's like, good choice is Will Smith.
Having only done Bound, the leap from Bound to this is insane.
Yeah. And I think with it being the 20th anniversary, there's a lot of articles out online now. Well, I think Wired does a bunch. I think Verge did a few. And it's just a real insight into a moment where nobody works like that anymore. You know, the production moved to Australia so they could be further away from the studio, you know, as opposed to just like, oh, for budgetary reasons.
Yeah.
No, and then...
But also it was around the time, I think there's an awful lot of stuff shooting Australia because of the exchange rate.
Yes, but, you know, so they had to get, you know, the Wachowskis were huge Chicago Bulls fans, so they had to get a special satellite uplink so they could watch basketball. It was just this really weird moment in sort of filmmaking where you could go to a studio or go to someone and pitch. When you duck, time stops but camera moves and people just go, that sounds cool, let's try it.
So we've been talking about the Wachowskis, which is a thread I want to pursue because this I think was kind of the last entirely sane movie they made before, you know, they leapt off into the world that we live in now. And also, I just want to talk about Keanu Reeves. So we'll get back to this in just a little bit. You are listening to Skip Intro, BFM 89.9.
Best flipping moments, BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, everyone. It's Skip Intro with Lynn, Ian and Bahe. And today we are marking, it's been 20 years, basically, since The Matrix, which I think makes everyone feel old, but also, it's been a while. So the guys rewatched it. I've just kind of been, I relive it in my head.
Well, déjà vu.
There are things that are just so indelible about that film. But we were talking about the production, right, a little earlier and how it was a bit strange. Mm. Let's talk about Matrix 2 and 3.
Didn't rewatch those.
Yeah, they kind of... I mean, I think there was a lot on them to replicate, to take the next step with regard to the Matrix, because there were a lot of bits and bobs in 2 and 3 where you just go... It feels like they're trying to take it a step up, but failing or falling a little short.
I think. Raves and Zion. That's where it kind of lost me. It's just like this scene is going on too long.
Mm.
And the first movie, I don't know whether they said they had all these plans and everything, but the first movie ends with Neo being a superhero because anyone can be a superhero.
Yeah.
Then you have to see him be a superhero and it's kind of lame.
Isn't that the problem when your first movie is near perfect?
Yeah.
I think when you have like a near perfect self-containing thing, and then you decide, you know what we should do with this thing?
We should
expand it. Yeah. You know, and I don't think it could take that kind of pressure.
Because necessity is the mother of invention. And when you only have so much budget, the Hollywood executives could be arriving at any moment. You get creative and you get things working. Things like some of the effects from the first movie look better than some of the effects from the second. The Burly Brawl, I think it is, in the second movie, which is the fight scene with like all the Smiths attacking Neo.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That was terrible.
That looks terrible.
Yeah, it does.
Like they look really rubbery. They tried to push the CGI, what they call it, the computer actor, digital actors concept way too far. It was like their reach extended their grasp, unfortunately. Mm. Whereas in the first movie, it was like the bullet time worked really well. They used CG for things CG was good at the time, like the liquid thing. And like having the Sentinels. It's amazing how the Sentinels are just in fully 3D environments the whole time. They're not really interacting with people.
Yeah.
So there's not really that much opportunity to show how bad they might look beside people. Yeah. Also, I never understood how they fly.
Yeah.
They just kind of float. There's like
it's the Matrix, bro.
The Matrix predicted drones.
Yeah. and you're right. Something about like, you know, necessity being the mother of invention. There was, in the first one, there was a scene where they first go into the simulation. The scene with the lady in the red dress.
Yes.
I was reading an interview with the directors, and they were saying what they did to amp up the weirdness was they got twins.
They cast twins, yeah.
And they just, so the entire set was just filled with twins. So instead of faking people sort of walking in constantly, they just got twins to go around. So, and it's things like that you don't have to, as an audience, be too concerned about. And when you see the Agent Smith battle, which is just bad CG, doing it with twins just makes you go, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. It comes down to, I mean, that word is clever, right? Like the idea of using twins, it's a clever idea.
Mm. But it's also necessity. We don't have the budget to CGI all these people. So.
Exactly. Mm. But when you don't need to use your cleverness, you know, that's when you end up with these like really strange and mood-wise also, I didn't know what they were going for with either of those films. Whereas the mood of The Matrix was so precise. Like everything about that movie was precise. It wasn't just the action. Yeah. It was the way the tension was ratcheted up. It was the fact that this was a world that you could understand. It was the fact that they set the mood at a certain level.
Yeah.
Whereas with the other two films, you're like,
we just talked about the architect's explanation of what the Matrix is, and he's just like waffling, and the audience just, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Neo, shoot this guy or fly out a window, do something. What is this? I mean, at one point, I heard a theory that like this after the second movie, Zion was actually another Matrix. So while that escaped from one level of the program, they were still in a program, and humans were going to come from the moon to actually rescue them from the real pods they were in.
Yeah, that was something. Yeah, I remember that.
And I was like, thank God. That means that like the last human society is not this weird, crusty reggae festival. And it wasn't that. And then they started killing off characters we loved, like saving characters in one movie only to see them murdered in the next one, and then blinding your hero and just, where are we going with this? This is not the fun, like self-affirming movie that the first one was, where anyone can be anything. This
it
is
was
like,
that they went too far down the rabbit hole.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, it was just like,
and they
calm
ended up
down,
as the Mad Hatter.
Back. Yeah. And no, you're right. They become the Mad Hatter, right? This, the architect thing, the oracle being yes, but no. And then the oracle and the architect are actually
the
friends.
Train man, the whole thing.
I'm just like, I have no idea what's going on right now.
Yeah. And once you go that deep, you can't really get back out, partly because I think of the intellectual pressure and weight of being the Matrix guys.
Yeah.
You know, so you have this reputation for making this really clever film. You have this reputation for making this like groundbreaking thing. And so now you've pursued all those theories to what you think are the logical ends. And you're like, okay,
you
like
more, what?
I can't really get out of this. Yeah. I'm here now. Okay. Yeah. Blinding.
I used up all my literary 101 references. I can't do anything else.
Yeah. It was weird. It was disappointingly weird.
Can we talk about Keanu Reeves though?
Sure. Please.
Because Keanu Reeves, I mean, like, he is a very specific sort of actor.
Mm-hmm.
And in some films, he just shines. And I think in The Matrix, he was great.
It's just perfect casting.
Yeah. It's great.
I mean, I still sort of, my problem is I still fall out of it when he goes, whoa.
No, I love that.
You know, I know, because the thing is, that's Keanu Reeves. That's just how he does it. But because my first introduction to Keanu Reeves was, unfortunately, Bill and Ted.
How dare you say unfortunately?
No, I love Bill and Ted. I used to rewatch
but
both.
But it ruined a lot of other movies
but
he was in afterwards.
But it ruined when he tries to do a serious role and he goes, whoa. And I'm just like.
But directly after the whoa, he does a very human kind of getting himself ready to do the jump.
Yeah.
And he's like, mine's no problem. I can do this. Yeah. Just that he's doing these weird arm movements, and he runs weird. It's a bit like Harrison Ford. Like even when he's hunkered down earlier, it's one thing. But when he's running at the end of the first movie, he does something weird with his knees. I don't know. They don't seem to be fully under his control. And
it's that he just recently learned how to do it.
Yeah, but like his blankness is perfect for a guy called Neo who becomes the One. You know what I mean? It's just, it's a special kind of blankness that he can do.
That like, look of perma confusion.
Yes.
Is great.
He's I love that sentence, perma confusion.
But that's what it Never is, right? It. Yeah. From the start, it's just a little bit like, huh? And then it keeps going, huh? But I have more information now, but there's more information I've yet to find. And then it just keeps going. And like,
I know Kung Fu.
He's just such a perfect actor to put this sort of film on, you know? I think it's why John Wick works as well, because it's the same sort of thing. It's just like, we don't need a story. We just need Keanu Reeves and a bunch
of training.
6 months training, you know, near superpower or superpower, you run, go do your thing. It's great.
Next movie is a vampire. Fine, do it. I think that's another thing that really elevates this movie is they got all the actors to do almost all the action work and wire work and fight work, and you can see it so clearly. You can see that's Keanu Reeves' fist almost hitting Lawrence Fishburne, and that's Trinity doing these things.
Yeah, because they don't have, I mean, literally they said, they don't have the budget to hire stunt guys.
They didn't have the, I mean, I'm not sure about that, but like they had enough budget for everyone to train for 6 to 9 months beforehand and to be able to do, like, they learned jiu-jitsu. Like, he does know kung fu now. Mm. And then like he's bringing up John Wick, he did the same where he's doing competitive shooting course trainings and that's how he trains the movie and he gets good ranks.
Yeah.
Because he's done it, like, you know, it's the, what was it, 10,000 hours of something, he's supposed to be good at it. He's done that for martial arts. He's like, isn't he a black belt? He's a certain belt in kendo and something like that, I think.
And I think that's a big difference, right? The directors are no longer then have to cut because you have to worry about someone's face showing up, right? You can just let the cameras run wild. You can just let the action run out without having to think about, oh, I'll need to cut here because I need to cover the guy's face and all that.
So, right, in closing, what I wanted to know really was, when it comes to The Matrix and how it shaped how you viewed movies, did it do anything for you? I mean, did it change your expectations of the kinds of films you were going to watch? Did it change your expectations of, I don't know, sci-fi or Keanu Reeves or just any of the rest of it?
It blew my mind.
Yeah, I think it shows, it's like discovering a new genre of something.
Yes.
You know, it's like discovering a new genre of film or a new genre of a book or a song or music.
Our monkey brains love novelty. Something new and exciting is what, like, you know, it gives us that dopamine hit. And this was so much of that. It's like, oh, there's all the, what's all this mystery stuff? Oh, there's all this martial arts stuff. Oh, there's all these robot stuff. Like, they don't even, they kind of hint at the AI thing. Mm. It doesn't feel like a science fiction movie.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't feel like a science fiction movie. It doesn't feel like a science fiction movie. It doesn't feel like a martial arts movie. It doesn't feel like a, you know, journey into the philosophical minds of someone. It's The Matrix.
And on that note, it is the 20th anniversary of The Matrix. So watch it. Let us know what you think. Does it live up to your memory of it? Is it as good as you always remembered it to be? WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. You can tweet us and find us on social media as well on Skip Intro MY. And drop us a line at movies@bfm.my. If you've seen anything recently that you loved or that you hated, or you just want to, I don't know, complain about something, write into us. You can find us there. And tomorrow, we hope you're all geared up for Avengers Endgame, because we are. Tune in tomorrow, same time, same place, to find out what we thought. And don't worry, it is going to be spoiler-free. You've been listening to Skip Intro, BFM 89.9.